Today, we look back on a decade of research on vilazodone as this antidepressant goes generic. Welcome to the Carlisle Psychiatry Podcast, keeping psychiatry honest since 2003.
I'm Chris Aiken, the editor-in-chief of the Carlisle Psychiatry Report.
And I'm Kelly Newsom, psychiatric NP and a dedicated reader of every issue. Today, we have the number one most read article from 2023. Vibrid goes generic, but is it worth prescribing? This one's by Dr. Aiken, and he has no conflicts to disclose. You can read all of the top 15 articles free online through the link in the show notes, or just Google top 15 Carlisle Psychiatry articles of 2023.
After 11 years of market exclusivity, vilazodone Vibrid lost its patent in June of 2022. The price of this multimodal antidepressant has fallen to $40 a month. More patients can afford to take it, but whether we should prescribe more vilazodone is less clear.
Here's how it works. In the brain, vilazodone acts like a combination of an SSRI and buspirone. Like an SSRI, it is a potent serotonin reuptake inhibitor. And like buspirone, it is a 5-HT1A serotonin agonist. Vilazodone's manufacturer hoped this dual mechanism would lead to faster onset, more anxiolytic effects, and fewer sexual side effects. At first, those hopes seemed to pan out, but today they only hold up if the data are cherry-picked. Let's look at those hopes one by one, starting with whether it has a faster onset.
Vilazodone's clinical efficacy in depression rests on four large, short-term randomized controlled trials in major depressive disorder. In the first trial, vilazodone separated from placebo after just 1 week, and in another trial, it separated at 2 weeks. Looks impressive so far. However, there was no early response in the remaining two trials, and you know, most antidepressants have some evidence of early efficacy like that within the first 2 weeks, so even a generous interpretation here does not suggest anything special is going on. So, if vilazodone is not faster, might it be more effective? None of the vilazodone trials suggest greater potency than other antidepressants. Its antidepressant effects are similar to those of citalopram, 40 milligrams a day. That's from a large head-to-head trial, and I do mean large, 1,133 patients. That study also compared two fixed doses of vilazodone, 20 milligrams a day and 40 milligrams a day, and it found the two doses were similar. There was no evidence of greater benefits at the higher dose. Overall, vilazodone's efficacy is similar to that of other modern-day antidepressants, which is not particularly high. The number of patients you'd need to treat, the NNT, to achieve a response with vilazodone, a response that wouldn't have been seen with placebo, is 8, compared to 4 to 16 for other antidepressants. So it's right smack in the middle because a lower end number needed to treat indicates greater efficacy. Whether vilazodone can reliably bring patients to full remission, though, is debatable. Remember, that NNT was just for response. A meta-analysis suggests that 10% of patients, only 10%, achieve remission, full remission, on vilazodone. But the only large trial that reported remission rates found that it was no better than placebo. We were digging here, and sorry, we couldn't come up with better evidence than that.
Vilazodone is no more effective than other meds, but does its unique mechanism give it a niche in treatment-resistant depression? Probably not. Vilazodone has never been tested in treatment-resistant depression. But two switch studies in patients who failed to recover after a trial of an SSRI or SNRI cast doubt about its ability to work when other antidepressants have not. Its long-term data are also uninspiring. Phenazolamine failed to prevent depression in a large study that randomized patients who responded to the drug to either placebo or continuation of the antidepressant. That is telling, since these enriched study designs usually favor the antidepressant. Let's pause for a preview of the CME quiz for this episode. Start earning CME for this podcast through the link in the show notes. One, what is the main limitation of phenazolamine in depression? A, poor tolerability. B, lack of preventative data. C, drug interactions. D, withdrawal problems.
One of the most common myths we hear about new drugs is that they have an edge in anxiety. Anxiety is a very nonspecific symptom. Really, if you look it up in the dictionary, anxiety is just a synonym for distress. And, you know, distress, anxiety, those things tend to improve as any underlying disorder is treated. So, if you run an anxiety scale as part of a treatment study in, say, schizophrenia, mania, or depression, you're likely going to see that anxiety go down. But that doesn't mean that the antipsychotic mood stabilizer or antidepressant is an anxiolytic. So what about phenazolamine? Does it have any niche in anxiety? With its resemblance to SSRIs and buspirone, phenazolamine might seem well-suited for anxiety disorders. However, its lack of FDA approval in anxiety disorders, despite industry-supported trials in generalized anxiety and social anxiety disorders, raised doubts. So, yes, the industry tried, but they didn't get FDA approval, so what do those studies look like? Well, on the surface, it looks like phenazolamine worked, but it worked very tepidly. In three large randomized controlled trials of generalized anxiety disorder where phenazolamine was used at 20 to 40 milligrams a day, the average was 31 milligrams a day, the effect size in GAD was very small, and its tolerability was particularly poor in this anxious population, especially with nausea and diarrhea, so it didn't move it toward FDA approval. There's also an industry-sponsored trial in social anxiety disorder that was positive, but that study was very small and the dropout rate very high. A larger follow-up study in social anxiety disorder was abandoned by the company midstream, so none of this is really giving us much confidence of using this medication for anxiety disorders. Maybe you'll find here and there a patient who responds, but it's not for most.
The story brightens when we turn to anxious depression, but not enough to endorse phenazolamine as a first-line option. Michael Thace and colleagues reanalyzed two large phenazolamine trials to see if its effects differed in those with anxious versus non-anxious depression. The majority, 82%, fell into the anxious category. Phenazolamine improved both anxiety and depression in the anxious group, but did not work at all in those with non-anxious depression. That almost sounds like an endorsement of phenazolamine in anxious depression, except for this. A large trial found that citalopram was a more effective anxiolytic in depressed patients than phenazolamine.
Now let's talk about phenazolamine's tolerability. We're going to focus on one area where phenazolamine does have an edge, sex. When phenazolamine was first launched, the initial data suggested that the drug lacked sexual side effects. Later, we learned that most of the patients in those trials had nothing to lose, as their sex drive was already close to zero when they started the medication. So that cast some doubts. But while phenazolamine did not lower their already absent libido, did cause sexual dysfunction in those who entered the study with their sex drives intact, at a rate of 8% compared to 1% on placebo. Later on, there were head-to-head comparisons with sertraline and paroxetine, and those did suggest, to its credit, that vilazodone carries a lower risk of sexual dysfunction than the SSRIs, consistent with the partially supported idea that buspirone treats SSRI-induced sexual dysfunction. Remember that vilazodone is kind of like an SSRI with buspirone tacked onto it. That's a rough approximation.
Overall, vilazodone's tolerability problems are similar to those of the SSRIs, with transient nausea, diarrhea, dizziness, and more lasting sexual dysfunction and insomnia. There is no reason to think that vilazodone is free of more serious SSRI side effects like hyponatremia, osteopenia, suicidality, and withdrawal problems, but research into these areas is scant.
Here's how to prescribe it. Vilazodone dosing is relatively straightforward, with a few obstacles that are described in the table that goes along with this article. For example, it needs to be taken with food. Up to half of the dose is not going to get absorbed in a fasted state. On the other hand, potent CYP3A4 inhibitors, like grapefruit juice, so don't take it with that one, can raise vilazodone levels about twofold.
The bottom line, consider vilazodone in patients who respond to an SSRI but need an antidepressant with a lower risk of sexual side effects, and who do not respond to bupropion and vortioxetine, where sexual side effects are closer to zero. Otherwise, there are several reasons to avoid this antidepressant first line: tolerability, food interactions, and questionable benefits when it comes to preventing depression or treating comorbid anxiety disorders. Check out the online article for a Carlyle table on how to use vilazodone. We have a new program, Carlyle Psychiatry News, where we'll bring you monthly updates of all things psychiatric. Check out our April edition on the Carlyle website. Search for webinars.
No, let's break the payroll and make this first episode of Carlyle Psychiatry News freely available to all. Just go to YouTube and search for Carlyle Psychiatry Report. You'll see it there on our channel.